This podcast is for informational purposes only. We are not medical professionals and do not provide medical advice. Consult a healthcare provider for any health concerns. Opinions expressed are not a substitute for professional medical guidance.
Hello and welcome to the Optimize We podcast. I'm your host, Lindsay O'Neill, and today I am joined by one of my dear new friends, one of my favorite people, as I usually say, but Haley is actually one of my truly favorite people, not only because we have gone through a very similar path in our lives and careers, but also because we are actively looking at what different biohacking tools, tricks, tips, lifestyle changes we can do for ourselves and for our children, for our clients, our friends, for our families. So welcome to the podcast, Haley Foster.
I love that at this age in life, and I've got a couple of years on you, but at this age, you can find people that are like immediate friends. And I'm so grateful to have met you and to now be a part of your life and to have you as a part of mine. So,
well, thank you for that. I feel this exact same way about you. And I feel like I've met a soul sister in you. And again, we've had like such an interesting past. We both worked in media, advertising. We were both successful entrepreneurs and executives throughout our career. And your pivot to this biohacking world, you're jumping in with both feet, just happened last year. And it was a really scary event for you and for your daughters.
Our biohacking started a little bit before that. We were already doing a lot of the modalities in terms of turning it into more of my business, I would say. That started probably about a year ago. I'll give you the synopsis.
When you were doing biohacking with your now husband, Brian, who's awesome, and he's a former
Navy SEAL.
And they're intense people. So they don't do anything small. What were you doing? What were you guys actively doing in your household to optimize your health?
So the funny thing is, he got me into CrossFit years ago when we first started dating. And initially I was like scared of it. I was like, no, that's your thing. I'm just going to do my little thing over here in my gym. You do you. And I'm going to do me. But within, a couple of months of us being together, he's like, I really want you to come. Like, it's such a great community. And so I jumped into the CrossFit world and started doing some intense exercise with him and this new community. And over the years, we kind of pushed a little too hard, broke ourselves. And so I think that really started us on our healing journey in terms of, all right, how do we optimize this for the long term? Because there's no CrossFit gyms in the blue zones. And so we started, really thinking about the longevity of our bodies and our minds and, our physical beings. And I want to say it started off actually with Dave Asprey's book. I don't even know how I found it, but I somehow stumbled upon Superhuman, read that, and then very shortly thereafter, I started reading Peter Diamandis's book, The Future is Faster Than You Think, both phenomenal. And then I started listening to Peter, started listening to Jay Shetty, and I sort of dove into this world. And this was 2020 because we were in the middle of the pandemic. And I remember driving through the city going to probably like get our vaccinations, regrettably so. And I remember listening to it on the way back. And I think that was really what propelled us quickly into buying a lot of the things. I started looking at Dave Asprey's biohacking conference, which I'm excited to see you at in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And then I never went, but we just started following all the people. Mark Hyman came into my sphere, and Andrew Huberman and Dr. Robin Rose and all of these, and Sarah Gottfried, all these people just started, the algorithm works, people, like on Instagram, you start talking about biohacking. And so we started doing cold plunges. There's a place that opened up near us called Boost, and we started going there for infrared sauna and cryo. And then they got a cold plunge. So we were doing contrast therapy and red light and hyperbaric and all the things, the PEMF mat, the compression sleeves, you name it, we were doing it.
You dove headfirst into
headfirst. We got memberships. We were there multiple times a week, just making time for it. You know, his back was going in a bad direction. And so we were trying to do all the things to fix him. As best as
your husband had a similar injury to my fiance, which is the L5S1.
Yeah, he's L4, L5.
L4, L5. I mean, yeah, regardless of where it is in the lower lumbar,
it doesn't feel good.
It's really, really painful.
Yeah.
So you're doing all of these things. You kind of got into it in the middle of the pandemic, like a lot of people did. A lot of people took a hard look at their health in the middle of the pandemic and said, I need to do something better than what I've been doing in my life.
Well, I started drinking clean wine during the pandemic too. So we were, you know, we were drinking and we were like, if we're going to drink, we might as well drink the good clean stuff that doesn't have pesticides, doesn't have preservatives, no added sugar.
Right.
So that sort of started us on our clean drinking journey, which has now 2.5 years later turned into no drinking. So sobriety has been amazing for both of us. And I have to say, like, I feel like $1 million better.
And then, you know, going into what happened last year, you were already on the sober train. You were already on the biohacking train, pretty significantly on the biohacking train. You were like at the front of the train, trying everything, going multiple times per week to do all the things, the cold plunge, the red light, the hyperbaric. And then what happened?
So we were already signed up for Dave's biohacking conference, which was at the end of May. And on April 28th, we were away with two of our kids. It was spring break. Brian was swimming in a charity event. We didn't get a good night's sleep. We flew home the next day on April 29th. And when we got home on the 28th, my daughter was standing at the freezer looking for ice cream. And she was like, blah, blah, blah. I was like, what was that? And she's like, I don't know. I can't get the words out. I was like, honey, you're exhausted. Don't watch One Tree Hill tonight. Just put your phone down and go to sleep. You need some rest. So Brian was leaving first thing in the morning to fly out to California for a business trip. My ex-husband and my other daughter were already in California, in San Diego, which is where Brian was flying to. And Jackson got up in the morning. All of her friends had planned this like fun beach day for like, you know, one of the last few days of break. And she woke up and she had texted me in the middle of the night saying, it's still happening. You know, I'm scared. It feels weird. And she didn't wake me up. She didn't call me. She probably thought I would have been like, just get some rest. So I woke her up in the morning and she was already up and I was like, how are you feeling? And she's like, I'm okay. I was like, all right, are you sure you're okay? She's like, I'm fine. I'm going to go to the beach. And I was like, okay. So she was definitely talking slower and, you know, whatever she was doing, she was trying to convince me she was good enough to go. So I grabbed her a yogurt, grabbed her some water, and I dropped her off at a friend's house. And I was like, if you don't feel good, just text me or call me and I'll come get you. And I really wasn't thinking anything of it. And then I was on a call. I saw the text come in. And before I could even, you know, say to my person I was talking to, hold on, my phone rang and it was her. And she was like, come get me. And I was like, okay, where are you? And she was trying to tell me where she was and she couldn't. Like, she just couldn't get the words out. And I was like, all right, Jack. And I said to the person on the phone, like, I got to go. I just grabbed my water. I grabbed my phone. I grabbed my wallet and I walked out the door. I kept her on the phone the whole time. And I'm like, where are your friends? And she's like, not here. I was like, you need to go back to them. She's like, I can't, mommy. I can't. I was like, okay. So I pulled up Life 360 and I was able to find her. She was at a local beach near here. And I kind of knew, like, there's not that many beaches near here. So thank God she wasn't far. I think I blew every stop sign on the way to get her. I just kept her on the phone the whole time, just talking to her, be like, it's okay. Like, don't worry. I'll be there in like 3 minutes, 2 minutes. And as I'm driving, which no one wants to hear this, I'm like texting Brian while I'm on the phone with Jack, while I'm on Life 360.
Oh my God.
Texting him because he's on the plane now to California. He's only taken off like an hour and a half ago and letting him know like something's up. I'm going to get Jack. She said she has a bad headache. She's feeling it in her right arm. And you know, I'm taking her to St. Francis, which is our local heart hospital, which is right around the corner. And so I snatched her up. She got in the car. Her whole right side was trembling. And she was like, I need to go to the bathroom. I was like, you'll go to the bathroom. At first, I was like, let me text my friend who's on the way. And then I was like, you know what? Forget it. We're just going to go to the bathroom when we get there. Pulled into the emergency room. It was a heart hospital, thinking like, you know, who knows what it could be. But if it's, you know, she's slurring her words, she can't get her words out, like it's either heart, brain. So we get in, and within minutes, they're doing intake on her. She's looking at me doe-eyed, and I'm trying to hold her hand, sign the forms. Within minutes, they've got her, you know, on a gurney, getting her changed and taking her blood, and then getting her into a CT. Basically, the guy sits me in the corner. He's like, you know, just sit here. We'll let you know what's going on. So I sit down. I text Brian, and I was like, this is where we are. I'm not sure what's going on. And then with that, he comes out and he's like, she has a pretty significant brain bleed. And I was like, what does that even mean? Like how? And he's like, we're giving her some contrast. We need to see like where it's coming from. A couple of minutes later. So it turned out she had this arterial venous malformation, which is called an AVM, which is basically they describe it like a rubber band ball of veins and arteries, but there's no capillary. So the blood just flows and flows and flows. And it's almost think of it like you keep going around in a circle in an exit ramp, right? And like eventually, like your wheels are going to burn out because there's only so much rubber on the wheels to continue going in this circle. And so basically she had a blowout and one of the arteries burst and gave her an aneurysm in her left frontal lobe. So, I mean, fast forward like three hospitals later, we ended up, they couldn't do anything for her there because she was a minor. Plus, they didn't have the equipment there. We had to take her to the children's hospital just to get her checked in to the pediatric hospital.
14 at the time?
14, yeah. So that they can then take her to a different hospital to get the procedure done along with the doctor. So like the entire neurosurgery team was there at the children's hospital by the time we got there. They basically gave her this series of questions, and then very quickly, they needed to figure out where the bleeding was and to stop the bleeding. They said it was going to be, you know, maybe a 45-minute procedure. An hour and a half later, it was complicated, meaning they like kept going in, shooting in the glue to stop the bleeding. If the bleeding didn't stop, they would come out, go back in a different way to see if that's where the bleeding was. So after an hour and a half, the doctor came out and just said, we need to stop. We risk giving her a stroke at this point. So we're going to keep her intubated, send her back over to the children's hospital. The surgery team is waiting if we need them. And we're going to get there and give her another MRI and just see how her brain is doing. We got there. Her brain was not doing well. It had swelled and shifted, meaning there was so much pressure that they had to open her up to let the blood out, basically. Yeah. So into surgery she went. And at this point, my husband, my ex-husband, and my daughter were back on another flight to New York. So they put her in. They basically had to like take off this whole part of her skull in order to relieve the pressure. And then they take that skull and they actually put it into her abdomen to preserve it, which is the really safest place for it. Yeah. What was interesting was when she woke up and she's like, what is this? She couldn't really speak, but she's banging on it because there's like a suture over it. And as she's asking, the doctor happened to walk in. He's like, that's your skull cap. And she goes,
oh my God.
Thinks this face at him like, that's disgusting.
She didn't lose her teenage responses, at least.
She didn't, actually. So the whole experience within the hospital, and it was a nightmare. We can record multiple details and multiple hours on it at some point. But fast forward, I mean, she was miraculously, she was like one of those patients. Her doctor was like, I can't believe I'm releasing this kid after a week. They basically, a couple of days later, they were able to go back in, remove the AVM, whatever was left of it, and then put her skull cap back on. So, and it was I think it was 4 days later. And then 3 days after that, we were out of there. She was back at home. And then in PT, OT, and speech for the next couple of weeks. And
so do you feel like she would have had a longer recovery, or she would have stayed in the hospital longer if you hadn't started implementing some of these healthier strategies in your life and in your family, your family's lives?
So one of the issues that I had, first of all, thank you for modern science and, you know, and
right,
technology that is out there that saved her life. Like, if it weren't for a lot of the things that they did, she would not be here, without question. Yeah. But thank God for that. One of the things that I think gave me the support that I needed and the education I needed was all of the education that I've had over the years, right? So, when you need a pharmaceutical for certain things, great. But when I stood in that room and the doctor was like, well, we're giving her this, but then we have to give her this to counteract this. And then we have to give her this in order to counteract this. And finally, I was like, I'm done. Like, I'm done with all of this craziness, like this poor kid. And it was a nightmare. The entire 7 days that we were there, it was just, you know, we slept there. We never came home.
Did you feel like you had to advocate for her all the way?
100% advocate for her. You know, there were certain things that they wanted her blood pressure to stay at a certain level because they didn't want, you know, her brain to be flooded with high blood pressure. And so they were doing this one thing where she had there was some breathing issue at some point with her. And so they had this giant suction mask on her face that was really uncomfortable. And she was screaming to take it off. And it was also like hospital, I forget what it's called, but when they have like that panic in the hospital where they like go crazy, like she was having that at night.
There's like a medically induced psychosis, but then it's also, you know, she had blood in her brain and swelling of the brain. And so, you know, you never know how any sort of brain trauma is going to impact your emotional state.
Right.
Yeah. Right? Well, emotionally, even people with cancer or, you know, Alzheimer's, dementia, there's this like confusion that happens because your body is essentially fighting itself.
Right. Yeah. And there was confusion, there was frustration. And so at one point I was like, they gave her a test. It showed that there was some fluid buildup. Meanwhile, like this kid, she's tiny. Her fingers were like the size of sausages. Her legs were three times the size. She had so much fluid in her body. I'm like, you just laid her down in an MRI machine for 60 minutes. Right. Of course she has fluid floating around everywhere. So they were trying to open up her lungs. And I was like, just let her sit up for a few hours. So finally I was like, I'm done with this machine. Like, you're going to give her like another aneurysm, like leave her be. So it
gives me an aneurysm having to
go through
all of this hell.
Yeah, there was that too. And I do say that thank God I had a gratitude practice for the last 10 years because there were so many things I was grateful for. And there were so many ways that I found myself just like taking a quiet moment to find my calm, to find my peace. Mm-hmm. You know, writing is like very cathartic for me. And so like I found myself just sitting and writing. And I was posting on Facebook every day for people that wanted to know what was going on. And that was my way of sharing and healing. And our community was devastated. So it was me being able to drop into the community from there and just fill them in on what was going on.
Very for her friends, too, that probably witnessed it. Or, you know, I'm sure there's a level of guilt that everybody feels.
Everybody. Even like
you, including her, including Jackson, you know?
Yeah. The mom that I dropped her off at is like, I still think like, why didn't I notice it in the morning? Like, why didn't I see it? And her friends say the same thing. Like, what's crazy is there's one picture from that day and she is bent over like this. Mm-hmm. Like they're all laying out and they must have taken a selfie and she's just like this with her head in her hands. And, you know, her friends didn't realize either and they felt terrible. There was a prayer circle on the Tuesday night before her second set of surgeries in town. And like, I don't know, like some ridiculous amount of people showed up, but it was like so many kids just like crying in this. I could cry just thinking about their faces. I could just see them so vividly, but like crying in the circle, like so scared.
And fear, shame, guilt, those are all really low vibration.
Yeah.
Really low vibration emotions that keep you kind of stuck in the same, right? Keep you stuck in the fear, in the shame. We always want to think that they're going to be okay, right? It's like our brain is meant to keep us safe, not to make us happy. And so to keep us safe, it can kind of ignore some things and also hope for the best in a lot of ways. And I get this question a lot around biohacking and like all of these modalities, like all the stuff that you were doing beforehand. It sounds like the most important thing was your gratitude practice, because gratitude probably got you through the emotional side of it and is still getting you through the emotional side of it. It's also free. You know, you don't have to pay for red light therapy sessions or hyperbaric chamber sessions or any of that kind of stuff to share your gratitude. What have you done emotionally to get to the place where you are now? Because I know you're still in it.
You're still going through it.
Yeah.
Yeah, she has another procedure, actually. I don't even think I shared this with you, but they found more ABM.
You did, and I didn't know what you had decided to do, if you were going to go ahead with the procedure or not, but...
It's the best. We met the doctor the other day, and he was lovely and very comforting, and it's the best option for her. She wants it out. You know, the fear that she gets is that it's there.
Right.
And she wants it out sooner than later. And like we were talking yesterday about her doing it after camp. And she's like, I don't want to go to camp with it.
Tell me a little bit about this fear and your gratitude practice. And, you know, how important is that versus all the biohacking stuff that you can do?
I think the mindset is everything. If there's one thing that, so I had a spiritual life coach as a client for the last 2 years, and I thank God that she was in my life. Seriously. I mean, she opened me up to just believing in the universe and being able to see how a mindset shift or 3 deep breaths can change everything in your nervous system. She now is doing a lot of nervous system resets. And I met with her
family.
Well, she does it for me. So I meet with her. She does it for me. And she's amazing. We've actually went to this conference in California, and we both saw the people that started this Cogno movement. And they're interesting people. You should definitely check them out. And I said to her, Natalie, this is your calling. Like, you need to get certified in this, because this is you impacting people on a whole other level. Yeah. And, you know, had I not worked with her for the last 2 years, 2.5 years, maybe, I would have probably been in a very different place mentally. You know, my gratitude practice happened 10 years ago. I was going through my divorce, actually more than 10 years ago. It was during my divorce. And my rabbi had this small group program he was doing with moms. And he, you know, pulled out a part of the Torah that talked about gratitude and how you should start and end each day with what you're grateful for. And it just sets the tone. So if you go to bed thinking about what are the things that I'm grateful for that happened today, even if they're tiny little things, you go to bed and you wake up thinking positive. And then when you practice that gratitude, first thing when you open your eyes before you put your feet on the floor, what are 3 things I'm grateful for this morning? Your day just starts off on a completely different tangent. And I just had this conversation yesterday with someone who's really sick and she's not been feeling well for months. And I noticed her Instagram. And since October 7th, she has posted every single day about Israel. She has family there. It's very traumatic for her. And I was like, you have to stop doing this. I know that it's important to you, but this could be what's making you sick. Yeah. I said, you are waking up, checking your phone. You have the sirens from Israel app on your phone that goes off in the middle of the night if there's bombs. you are going to bed at night looking at your phone and posting all this negativity. Like, you're in this cycle of negative and negative and negative, and there's causes you to just be in fight or flight all the time. And, you know, this is some of what I learned over the last few years doing my own hormone journey and, you know, perimenopause before I was in perimenopause, doing CGM monitoring to see what's going on with my blood sugar. And my doctor's nutritionist was like, you're in fight or flight all the time. She's like, you need to calm the fuck down.
Well, also when you have high cortisol levels, so, and you're in perimenopause, what ends up happening is you're converting all of your testosterone and progesterone into estrogen. And then that can actually make you sick. You know, the majority of women who end up getting cancer get an estrogen-related cancer at some point after or during menopause years. Yeah. And it's usually because of this conversion. And we also don't have, because we don't have the fluctuations that we normally would have during a cycle, we're not getting rid of the toxins in our body. So we have toxic overload. We have all sorts of other stuff going on. But this all leads me back to the conversation around your mental health and your practice and your daughter's mental health and her fear. It's so hard as a mother, and I can relate to this. You can't manage someone else's fear for them.
No.
You can give them the tools, right? Like, you can practice. We do the same thing. We pray every night before the girls go to sleep, and they say the things that they're grateful for, and they pray for the people that they want to pray for. But Tony Robbins famously said, you know, you feel what you focus on. Mm-hmm. So your friend who is getting sick by focusing on the awful things that happened on October 7th of 2023, you know, for a year and a half now, she's been focused on that. I know so many people who are still focused on, you know, the pandemic and all this negative stuff. And it's easy when you go through something traumatic to continue to focus on that. And what Tony always says is, if you're a race car driver and you're driving around a turn at 200 miles per hour, do you look at the wall?
Oh.
No, because what happens if you look at the wall? You're afraid of hitting the wall, right? So your brain wants to look at the wall. But if you're looking at the wall, looking at the wall, looking at the wall, what's going to happen? You're going to hit the wall. Right. So instead of looking at the thing that's causing the fear, you have to retrain your brain to look at the bright side. And the easiest way and the fastest way to do that is through a gratitude practice. Mm-hmm. So I commend you for that. And I'm also really grateful that you had that going into it. And then all the other stuff is interesting too. You know, like you and I had a conversation about the Leela Quantum necklace, and we're both wearing it today. And some people feel a tremendous impact by wearing this or by putting their hand or their water or their food into the cube. But I think that a big part of biohacking is not just what you experience, but also what you believe. Mm-hmm. So if you believe that this is going to have an impact on you, a positive impact on you, it's going to protect you from EMFs, it's going to give you energy, it's going to, you know, lift up your mood and your spirits, then guess what? It probably is. So
let's talk about that for a second, because I think it's really important to take that to a deeper level of discussion. So I used to say, like, believe it and it will happen, right? Fake it till you make it, right? Because what's happening is, it's an energy shift. And I know that Tony Robbins talks about this too. When you believe that this is working, you are literally shifting your energy into a different realm, right? You are no longer in the, I'm dysregulated, I'm this, I'm that. You're like, nope, I'm not. Because your energy is now focused on what it wants to be, right? I don't want to be dysregulated. I want to be regulated. And I put this on because I was dysregulated. And do I believe it works? I actually do believe that it works. I mean, I was up and down all over the place emotionally and could not get my shit together. I couldn't find my even place. I was happy. I was sad. I was mad, all in like a matter of like seconds.
Right.
And I felt it. It was off. I was way off. I could cry on a dime. I spent years like finding my calm in my life, practicing so that I could be calm. And right. then when you have no control over it, and I literally had no control over it. It was like this plague, like that I was walking around with. It felt fucking awful. And yeah. I felt it was in my stomach all the time. But I walked around with it for a really long time, and we went to biohacking shortly after Jack got home from the hospital, because we were like, we paid all this money. There's going to be all these brain doctors there. Like, let's just still go. She'll be fine. She'll be with her dad. Like, it took, we cried on the airplane there. Like, it took a lot to get us to leave her. She was 3 weeks later. And then to be able to, like, be in it, right? And, you know, and I was drained. I looked like shit. I was exhausted. It was worth every single yeah. moment that we were there. I mean, it was unbelievable. We spoke to brain doctors. We spoke to Dave Asprey. We, you know, we bought tons of products. We met so many incredible people. And I don't know how we didn't meet while we were there.
Only there for a day and a half.
I'm sure we crossed paths a million times.
Sure we did, yeah.
But it was an amazing experience for us, and we learned so much being there. We met this guy, Dakota, and I wanted to bring him up because he's really important in the healing journey. We met him. He was helping out at the Shilajit booth, and we went over. We started talking to him, and it was right next to the Leelas, actually, right? So we were there. We were at his booth, and he was like, you guys are awesome. You guys need to come on a bioculture retreat. Like, we just started doing them. We're bringing in guests, and I'd love you guys to be part of one. So we were like, all right, let's get your info. We'll set up a call and we'll talk to you about it. So we left biohacking. I didn't buy a Leela. They were out. And so I waited till I got home. And then there was like a couple more incidents. I'm like, I need to get this thing. Like, I need the healing to begin. And it was a process, the healing. So this was May. We scheduled ourselves to go on the bioculture retreat for November. And we had also signed up for another conference where we knew a lot of the people that we had just seen were going to be there. So between May and November, I was getting better, but I couldn't get through Jackson's story like I just did. I'd be in tears. I'd be choked up. I'd like feel all the feelings. I can still see her crystal clear, but the emotion that was connected to it has been disconnected. And, you know, I was looking at EMDR doctors. I was really hesitant about going on this retreat, and Brian and I would go for walks and talk about it. And, you know, I said, like, I have a lot of fear and just like going, and like, I don't really know like what it's all about. And I know I'm going to be the oldest person there, which is fine, but it wasn't so fine for me. Like, I was feeling really insecure about it. And, well, what would be your goal of going? And I'm like, I just need healing. Like, I need to release the trauma. He's like, then let's go with that as the intention. You're going to release the trauma. Nothing else matters. We get there, and, you know, the first night we get into a Temescal ceremony, which is like a sweat lodge, a Mayan sweat lodge. And it's about an hour where you are in this little sweat lodge with 15 other people, and there's hot rocks, and it's hot as hell. It's like worse than any sauna you've been in. And there's a shaman who is leading the prayers. And so every 20 minutes, he opens the door, he lets the air in, and then he starts another session. And I went in, you set your intention before, like they, you know, they cleanse you with the smoke. And my intention was release. I just want to release the fear, release the trauma, like all the things that are holding me back and keeping me stuck in this state that I'm in. And I wasn't as dysregulated from like I can now control my emotions, but it was still, you know, it was still there. It was lingering.
Right.
We were doing breath work every morning, meditating every morning. And there was a guy there, part of the retreat, named Tim. And Tim is a healer, and he does touch healing, 5 grams of touch. And it's like the lightest touch. And the second day, we were in a breath work session, and Brian and I had been doing breath work, you know, a couple of times now. And every time I did it, I had like a crazy experience, like hallucinating, seeing visions.
Yeah, you can breathe your way into almost like a plant medicine
because it's releasing all the things that the plant medicine releases. You just have to puke your guts up and for an hour beforehand. You just actually breathe and it works. And so you're
sitting in the sweat lodge, you're doing all of the things. And
well, so we're in this breathwork session 2 days later.
Yeah.
And we're in a breath hold. And Tim comes over and just places his hand so lightly on my belly. And my whole body was like convulsing, like my arms, my hands, my legs, my stomach, like my whole body convulsed.
Like the exorcism.
Yeah, it was the exorcism. He literally pulled the trauma out of me.
Wow.
And I saw him later that day and I had a one-on-one set up already with him. And he's like, what do you want to work on? I'm like, I really need to release the trauma. And he's like, what if I told you already did?
Yeah.
And I did. I did. That night, we did a sound healing at another breath work session. And at the end, I went over and I was talking to two gentlemen. And one of them had said, you know, we never really heard your story about your daughter. And I started to tell them and I felt it. I felt the difference. Literally, I felt 100 pounds lighter telling the story. And I looked at them and they were like, are you okay? And I was like, yes. I'm like, this is the first time I've told this story and have not felt sick over it. And I was like, Crazy. Oh my God. And then I told them about Tim and the session and all that. And that retreat literally transformed me back to feeling human again.
There are no mistakes. There's no mistakes that you've come into my life that we have, you know, a similar story. Like even giving my TEDx a couple years ago, I actually stood on stage and for the first time was able to emotionally detach from my story. And I don't know if it was just because I knew I couldn't, I didn't want to cry in the middle of my TEDx or, you know, sheer willpower, or if I'd actually let it go through all of the things that I have done, you know, the breath work and the meditation and everything. But you're now transitioning this into not necessarily a business. This is your life's purpose. You've had the trauma. You did the work beforehand. You now have a strong foundation. You're able to tell your story to help other people heal in the way that you've been able to heal. You've gone through all of the different biohacking modalities. Tell people where to go to get into the details of your story and then also to stay in touch with you, because you're kind of in the middle of your story right now. And I feel like we need to schedule another podcast episode for like 6 months from now so that we can figure out how this story is not ending, but like what's the next chapter in the story for you. So how do people stay in touch with you and read the full story?
So the best place to stay in touch is fosteringlongevity.com. That is where you can sign up for our community, which is free right now, which is where we share a lot of the things that are working for us. And we started doing that on Instagram, you know, way before this happened. And so on Fostering Longevity, on the contact page, you can actually download a 20-page guide on really how to get started on a longevity journey. You know, what are some of the different tools you could be using? Who should you be following? Like, we look at ourselves as sort of like the middleman, right? So, you know, there's the people that are curious, and then there's the gurus and the experts and the products. And we look at ourselves as sort of like the funnel, right?
Yeah. For everybody, it's so different, and they may not have experienced something as traumatic like you have. But I think that the path is very much the same. It kind of starts with like,
It has to start with mindset. What it has to start with. And that's what the guide starts with. It's like, you have to shift your mindset. You have to be willing to remove toxicity from your life. Stop watching the news. Stop hanging out with the people that bring you down, you know? And I think it's also like an age thing. We get to I know I got to a point, and this was probably when I was 40 and getting divorced, and I was like, I'm done giving a fuck. I joke around all the time, like, I love the F-bomb, but I really, like, I'm a no-fucks-given kind of person.
Yeah.
Kind of always been like that. Like, you know how I feel about you. Mm-hmm. Like, I either really love you or not so much. And so I wear my emotions on my sleeve, but I got to a point where I was like, I don't care anymore. Like, I'm just going to be who I am. Like, this is me. You don't like it, then don't follow, you know?
Tough darts. So thank you so much for joining us today, Haley. You can follow her at Fostering Longevity on Instagram. Yeah. And then go to fosteringlongevity.com, download that amazing guide that you have, and then you can join this retreat. When is it in November?
It's November 17th to the 21st in Mexico.
I might have to join.
That's a good conversation that we were going to have offline after.
Yes, we are.
Well, you and Dan have to come. It's about love, life, and longevity. And so there's male energy discussions that are going on. There's going to be the feminine circle that's happening. Like, there's that whole side of it also, which is going to be super fun.
It's amazing. And I appreciate that because, you know, Dan and Brian had such a great connection when we had dinner and you and I couldn't stop talking. We could have had a dinner that lasted a whole week, I think.
I know.
I'm so grateful for you sharing your story on the podcast today. And I hope people do stay in touch with you and go to your website, download your guide, stay in touch with both of us, go to wellnesseternal.com, check out all of our content. We're going to have Haley back on to tell the next chapter in Jackson's story and in her story. And we're just praying for Jackson so hard and sending her so much love for this hopefully very easy, very quick recovery procedure that she's going to have.
It is easy and there's no recovery. And I guess it's the best shitty news we could have gotten.
I would love to hear her side of the story. So maybe we'll hear it directly from her if she's willing about that. Okay. Well, you can hear it through mom. Mom always tells it the best way anyway.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for having me. This has been fun.
Yeah. Thank you for joining.
Absolutely.
This edition of the Optimize We podcast is brought to you by the Biohacking Index. Visit biohackingindex.com for ratings and reviews of your favorite wellness solutions and wellness providers.